Welcome back to another episode of the Psyche Behind the Physique, listeners. I'm your host, Maddie Michelson, IFBB Bikini Pro, contest prep and integrative health coach, and founder of the Empowered Coaching Collective. Tonight, I am joined by none other than Greg Stewart with Greg Stewart Coaching. Greg is a neuro-linguistic programming coach and has been a part of my personal toolkit for years now. Greg's helped me through relationship struggles, preps, big life changes, moves, and so much more. And today I am honored and filled with gratitude to share his wealth of knowledge with you all. So, Greg, would you kick us off for our call tonight and introduce yourself to our audience? Maybe tell us where you're from, how you found yourself in your career, and maybe your connection to the health coaching space.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to see you as always, and glad to meet the people that will be turning on this channel and tuning in. And yes, I'm originally from New York, born in Brooklyn, raised in Long Island. And how I got into this work, I'm going to be totally transparent. That's the key I always feel to life. I suffered from depression. It actually came into depression. I got into a field that was promised to me that it was equal, meaning that nobody's seen any gender. Boy, did I find out wrong. I lived in Miami at the time. I went to school for sports massage therapy, and no doors were opening. If it wasn't for the good of orthopedics and chiropractic, that really opened a lot of doors for me in reference to getting into the health field. With that knowledge, how I got into behavioral work was I credit it mostly to NLP, where I did have a background in psychology, but it still didn't give me what I needed in reference to focus. Everything took years to develop what from my PTSDs and what I was going through. And I said, I hate to say it like this, but I need a quick fix. I need something that I can believe in, because if I'm a skeptic, if I don't see that it works, I'm out of it. So at this point, I actually turned on a gentleman that everybody's familiar with, but I don't know if I could say his name legally, but you'll get the idea. But he's very famous, life coach. And I said, boy, what a bunch of malarkey. I go, this guy, no wonder they put him on at 2 in the morning. Nobody's listening. But I was getting up with depression every night at about 2, 2, 3 in the morning. And I said, I feel like this guy is talking to me. I got into the work through that infomercial, started doing it, and lo and behold, years went by and I was doing it just for the fun of it. And people said, you really have a niche for this. You should get involved. So what opened up doors, massage through sports, eventually opened up doors to where I started working with IFBB pros. One of the gentlemen I worked with was a bodybuilder by the name of Vince Taylor, amazing guy in Pembroke Pines, Florida. And he said, you got a knack for this. But it really wasn't so much what I was doing for him physically, sports wise. It was the conversations we would have in between. Then I was fortunate enough to, from IFBB Pros, to connect doing neural muscular massage work plus the NLP with guys like the Miami Dolphins, from Zach Taylor to Jerris McPhail. And that really opened doors to have me believe that only basically 20% is physical and 80% is mental. And that's where my doors opened. But it took from going through depression and realizing this is what made me who I am. I shouldn't be mad at it. This is exactly who made me the person I became. So I hope that answers some questions in reference to, because I could talk to you about this all day.
That does. It's so cool because obviously I meet with you like right now, once if not twice a week. And it's so cool having these conversations. I actually had my own acupuncturist on a couple of weeks ago because I never knew this about you. So that's so cool. And thank you so much for sharing your heart and how you wound up in this space. I can definitely, now knowing your background, understand why I felt like you were such an integral component to my journey and my success when it came to my pro debut, because I personally was faced with a tremendous amount of, I don't want to use the word or the phrase, a lack of motivation, or just like a lack of the desire at that point to kind of get up on stage. And I just remember getting on the phone with you, and it was like you were different than any other therapist or any other counselor, I guess you could say, that I could have ever spoken to, because you understood what I was feeling. You also, you appreciated the physical push that I was going through, but where you really came in was to satisfy that mental need and to help me overcome that mental hurdle. And so, this is definitely something that I preach on my own team and within my own practice, is that it really takes a village. I can give you the workouts, I can tell you what to eat, and I can tell you how to eat it, but at the end of the day, a lot of this journey is mental.
Yes, well said. Perfect. And it's exactly it. It's all mental. Again, 80% is basically mental. 20%, if you don't have the mental, you're not going to get the physical. There's no question about it. Because one of the key things is where focus goes, life will flow.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting. I always love your little talk points. I'm getting a therapy session. How much do you charge out for this call? So on that thought track, where your focus goes, life flows. I want to talk about a lot of a very common word. It's a buzzword in the health and fitness space, and that is motivation. So I've always believed that motivation, it can be surface level and it can be artificial. Especially for a lot of competitors, it's their motivation to sometimes get up on stage. It's very surface level. It's very much tied to, I want to have a certain physique. I want to have a certain look. And so what happens is it's fleeting and it fizzles quickly the second that 20 minutes on the stairs turns into 90. Unless it's tied to a deeper intrinsic why. And I've seen and worked with a multitude of women now who have chosen a physique related goal or a health and fitness journey or a prep because they're motivated to change their physique, which is great. But in your personal experience, in your professional experience, do you believe that this is enough? Why or why not?
Okay, so I think, and this is just my own personal belief from all the people I've been fortunate to have breakthroughs and outcomes with, and it all comes down from the story that person's telling themselves, right? Because what you feel is going to be the story that you're telling yourself. So, in reference to, and I want to make sure I got the question right, whether it's someone that's a amateur or someone that's a pro going in, if all of a sudden they have stage fright, if all of a sudden they're going in like, I don't know if I could do this, and they're questioning themselves, well, I have to elaborate deeper than I said. Perhaps we need to dig a little deeper in reference to why now? If you had success up until, why now? But let's even take that off the table. Let's just start it from the get-go. Someone's starting out, and now they've done all this, they look great, they've practiced posing, or they've got into a fitness field, and all of a sudden they hit a wall, and it's like, what's going on that you hit the wall? So one of the key focus things that I put in is like, if we're pressed for time and they got to get a reaction quick, well, the first thing is I have to find a blueprint that's been successful. That's number one. So rather than, because they're already hurt, and one of the things that you'll learn in behavioral work is that you never press the conflict. Let them come out with it naturally. So you never press the conflict. You go to when they were successful. Everybody has a point where they were successful in life. So if I'm going to bring the best out of them, because exactly like you said, a lot of people, what do they do? How do they deal? What do they do if they can't deal? Well, you have to go to a point in life where they're successful, because success leaves clues. Success leaves clues. So from that point there, I'm going to find out all the successful points. Now, I can't name the athlete that me and my mentor were working with, but this individual who is a professional was struggling at a position in life that they were number one, and they fell to, let's just say hypothetically, number five, number 10, because I can't give their real ranking, but they were number one, I could say that. And so one of the things that, when you were successful, we asked, what did you do? If we were making a cake and you had to have all the ingredients, when you were successful, how many ingredients did you have to make this cake? And so they said, well, I had 35 ingredients. Okay. How long ago was that? That was 2 years ago. That was 3 years ago. Okay, perfect. So now we go back into the present. We went from the past to the present. Make that cake again. Tell me how many ingredients are in that cake. You said there were about 30, 35 ingredients. Write it down. How many ingredients? That person only had five ingredients out of 30. How could you be successful? If it looks like a cake, it smells like a cake, but it doesn't taste like a cake. Because all of the things that made that cake. So now we have to build that person's story because you knew and you know how to be successful. Let's build the cake. Let's make you. And this is what I use. And here's the key thing. After you tell yourself the story, here's where people make the biggest mistake. They know how to hypnotize themselves for the negative. They morph into the behavior. And people go, well, what do you mean they morph into the behavior? They literally become it. So if you met me for the first time and someone said, hey, this is Greg, and they go, believe it or not, this guy's a coach. And you started talking to me the first time, and I said, hey, Maddie, I'm your coach, and I motivate people. You're going to be like, setback. What is this person's story? They're so monotone. They're so this. There's no life into them because I brought something from my world into this world. And I can't give you the total focus that you need for your outcome because I morphed into a negative behavior. Notice my energy now, how high it is, how I'm in the mood, I'm in the mode, I'm morphed into a positive energy. That is the key focal point that I, after they make the cake, I have to test everything. I have to put them right back into pain and I have to bring them right back to success. And the more I reinforce that and give them homework, and then before they even go into an event or an experience, we have to test it, test it, test it until it becomes second nature. Any successful coach will spend hours. You don't need, like, to go to 20 seminars, but you do need one tool to do it over and over until it becomes a part of you. Here's a good point. I know we're pressed for time, but
No, go
Brazilian
ahead.
Jiu-Jitsu. So I've trained martial arts all my life. That's my background as well. I used to teach martial arts from MMA. And the one thing that America doesn't do often that Brazil does, you go into a school in MMA in Brazil, you get one lesson. You get one lesson. It might show you an arm bar, it might show you a triangle choke, it might show you. So there's your class. 2 hours, one technique. Why do they do this? Repetition is the mother of all skill. They will never have to teach that student that technique again. They have it down. Why do people struggle here? Because they get 30 tools and they remember none. They remember no tools and they can't be successful because they can't inherit what that coach, instructor, whomever taught them. So the key thing is I get one good tool. We'll talk about a few, but I'll get one good tool, use their story, morph their personality into a way where they believe in the tool. Because it was already there and it becomes part of them and they become successful.
Yeah, I love what you said too about I checked in with an athlete today and I send my athletes video check-ins and I checked in with her and she said, I'm just getting so wrapped up on social media. And as competitors, we do this, right? Like just before the show, we're on social media, we're looking at our competition, and the first, the first thing that takes a hit is like our own personal ego. We start to get in our heads about things and self-sabotage. And she said, I think I just need to delete social media. And I stopped her for a second because I've worked with her now for about 4 months. And I was like, listen, I believe in you, first of all, but I can continue to tell you every single week that I believe in you until you believe in yourself. And I introduced her to this concept, similar but different to what you're doing. And maybe you've used this before. I actually use it with a lot of my athletes who struggled with binge eating, but it's called a distractor. So, like in those moments, right? If we were watching our friend go on social media and then all of a sudden start like shit talking themselves, right? We'd be like, knock that off, stop it. But we're not good at doing it with ourselves. Yet we understand that it's a very unhealthy pattern and behavior. It's interesting how that tool in and of itself is an iteration of a distractor. And in the context of like binge eating, what a distractor is you feel this compulsion coming on. When I've worked with athletes who struggle with it, it's almost like this like innate like desire. They can't even stop themselves from going to the pantry and then they just can't stop the eating. It just never ends. And I said, in that moment, you feel that feeling coming on, run to the fridge, get an ice cube, right? Put the ice cube on the back of your neck, get your change your state of being. And going, taking yourself or almost like explanting yourself from a negative mindset and the thought track that goes with that, and putting yourself into a completely different situation where you've demonstrated success in the past, it is a distractor. It's a formulation of a distractor. So, I love that tool and I appreciate you sharing that. One of my questions for you as we kind of progress through this call was, how important do you think our own narrative and our own inner thoughts are? But I want to take that a step further. I know that in my own journey, I mean, sometimes, gosh, even this past week, when I'm on the phone with you, right? And when I'm one-on-one with a coach, I feel like I have my hype man right there. I'm like fired up, I'm ready to go in, guns blazing. And then we get off the phone and I'm like, wah, 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 right? Or I shut down my screen and I stop my coach's check-in and I'm like, wah, wah, wah. And I can revisit my notes and I can sort of get that spark back. But is there actually something to be said for the more you repeat something, eventually you believe it? Or do we really have to be wholeheartedly convinced of our own narrative for it to actually work?
Okay, so I'm still going to borrow what you were doing there, and I'm going to integrate it into this question. And the
Okay.
key thing is, what was the term that you called it again in reference to your clients when you bring up their power?
A distractor?
The distracted. So we call it limited beliefs.
Okay.
So because they're putting limitations on their belief system. So the key thing is we need to knock out those limitations.
Okay.
So having no limitation as limitation. So that's the first step. So, and in reference to, so go ahead now and give me that full question one more time because I wanted to sponge in here and grab it and squeeze out what you need.
Yeah, so my question literally was, how important do you believe the narrative we tell ourselves is? But my question in reference to our specific conversation in here is not just how important is our narrative, but how important is it that we are wholeheartedly convinced of it?
Well, and again, you have to think about it. Does that come from our PTSD? All right. And I'm not saying everybody has war neurosis or this, that, or what. I don't want that term to get misconstrued, but we all have a story. And if we're feeling a story that makes us powerful or makes us feel like I can't have that power when this part of my life is not in where I need it to be, then it's time to reevaluate yourself in a way. And the best way to do that is if you write it, you invite it. When you're in your head, you're dead. So that's the problem is that if you stay in your head, you're going to be dead. You have no room in here to get out. But if you write it, you have all of this paper to continue to express. And that's why I always tell people, get a book. But get something that has meaning. Get a hardcover book. Don't go to CVS or Walgreens and get a cheap little notebook because remember, that book is an extension of you. And do you see yourself as a little spiral notebook or do you see yourself as a Louis Vuitton? Okay. Because if you see yourself, and I don't mean Louis, like you have to be, financially this or superficial, whatever title someone wants to give it, but you want to see yourself as a Mercedes. And you have to reinforce it. And so the key thing is no matter where you come from and no matter what kind of pain you're in, this is where priming is important. Think about it. When I start my weight training every day, and you'll know a couple of the names and some people that don't look them up because they'll be just as inspirational. But my fitness center is in my garage. I literally built my two-car garage into a commercial grade fitness center. And I go in there. And I have a big screen TV. I don't listen to music because it's a distraction. What I do put on, though, so I can get the feel of a fitness center, is I'll put on Mike O'Hearn, I'll put on Derek Lunsford or Nick Walker because I feel like I'm training with them. So, what am I doing exactly? I'm priming. When you go to a concert, if you were going to Aerosmith, you're not going to put on Yanni on the drive to the stadium, right? You're going to prime yourself for the concert, you're going to get yourself ready for Aerosmith. The same if you're these people, going back to what we said before, if they're feeling negative energy, they're priming themselves. I can't, I won't, I should. And you'll go up to them, you should do this, you should do that. And they should all over themselves instead of making it a must. Until you make it a must, It's just a want. I want it, but that never happened. It doesn't
Right.
become a need. What think about what is some of the things that you definitely need in this life? I'm asking you now. You need a home, you need food. What else is a need? What else is a must? So that's the key thing. And here's the thing I also get when I finally get this person to turn the corner. Sometimes this is how we go two steps back. I'm like, they go, I really feel like this is what I need. And it's a material thing. And I'll say, how do you know? How do you know that you, and they go, you know, I don't know. And I go, if you can't answer how, then you never need it in the first place. How do you know is the key question to any kind of behavioralist work. We all have wants, we all have needs, but distinguish a need from a want. And make the needs the must. Because if it's, well, it's going, if I get that want, it's going to make me happy. How do you know? How do you really know that? Are you living for someone else then? Well, if I have that person in my life, I'll be happy. How do you know that that particular entity is going to do that for you? You know, people go, Greg, do you really need fitness? I feel it's a must. Because it's going to keep my heart in shape, it's going to keep my circulation, and it's going to keep me on earth. So yes, for me, that's a must. That I'll put in house, food, mental state. So I always go with that, and I hope this helps. I get very complicated, I know, but I hope this is breaking it down for the people to understand what's a must and what's a should and what's a need.
And I love to, there's so many things that you just said that like, and I just want to grab onto. One of the things is like on a very surface level, as you were talking about shoulds, wants, musts. I actually led a whole podcast on this a few weeks ago on the differentiating between ought to's, want to do's, and need to do's. And it kind of talked about, how we need to a lot of times put our own oxygen mask on first. I talk to a lot of my athletes about this. It's, we sometimes confuse and mistake our wants and our shoulds with our true intrinsic needs. And this is a lot of the work that I do, particularly. I see this a lot. No harm, no foul to them. I love them all so great. But stay-at-home moms that have, they're the leader of a house and they've got four kids underneath their wing that they're taking care of and they're cooking dinners and they're getting kids off to practice and there's no time for their own, they want it. They sign up to work with me, but there's no time for a workout in the day. And so we have to almost reconfigure, even their perception, right? We talk about how I can provide a program, but it doesn't matter even if that program is 20 minutes and can take place in your garage if you don't perceive it as a need. So I loved how you did answer that question of how important do you believe the narrative we tell ourselves is and that we're convicted of it. And in layman's terms, it's pretty damn important. But I didn't even think about the importance. It's so funny. I have my little affirmations journal here, but I didn't even think about the necessity of priming yourself, and the environment that you put yourself in. On that note, I actually checked in with an athlete today who was like, I was like, how's your workouts going? She's having a hell of a time at work. And she said, well, I'm not going to talk about work today, but I did stop doing my workouts at home and I put myself back into my bougie gym that I love to go to. So at least I'm around like-minded people. And I think there's so much power in that. There's so much power in the community that you keep. So Greg, I would love for you to elaborate here on what you think is necessary or sustainable from just like a coaching perspective. Like, how important do you think that the community that we keep is, not just in reference to the people that we surround ourselves with, but perhaps even like the type of coach or mentors that you select?
I think it's an outstanding question. And honestly, just like food, I hate to say it like this, but I'm going to, you are what you eat, you are what you think. Right? So if you are hanging out with people that don't have the same beliefs and values and standards you do, but you don't want them out of your life because they've always been there. And I don't want to make that shift because I feel like I owe them. Well, guess what? you're not getting out of that hole. You're going to be stuck in that foxhole until you decide to take charge of your life, until you decide to lead. That's the thing in life, is that leaders make the tough decisions. Soldiers look for the follower and hope that someone will get them out of there. And I'm not saying anything about military, this, that, or what, but there's a reason that there's kings and queens, and then there's pawns on a chessboard, right? You know, and the same thing goes into reference to perspective. And I think we've all been there. I know I could say that I was a follower, but then I realized through the work I do that we only connect with two types of people in this world. And that's people that are like us or people that we admire. So if you have people that you don't associate with that you admire and they're just like you, well, then you're not going to excel unless you decide to lead. And then you only way you're going to do that to become a leader is to get the resources you need. But it all comes from the story you're telling yourself. If you have no vision to move yourself ahead, to move yourself forward, and that's fine, and you're comfortable, then don't bitch and moan about it. But if you wish to lead, then you need to put yourself. Michael Jordan was a great example. When he was growing up, his family will tell you he would be out in front of the garage, they had the hoop, and he would say, "Dr. J has taken the shot," and shoot, Dr. J. He had admired this man's game, that he kept pretending and saying his feet have to be here, his hand has to be there, until he became the leader. He became Michael Jordan because he didn't have the role model. So there's one tool a person can use if they can't get out of the foxhole, but it all does start here in the story you tell yourself. And that's why in any work, your work, my work, or even someone with their children, or even someone within themselves, tell your story the way you want it to end. Because if you don't find that admiration or find the people, because they're out there, and that's the beautiful thing of technology, is that, like I said before, priming. I don't have Derek Lunsford waiting for me every morning at 5 in the morning to train, but I do on YouTube. You see? We can find leaders now to bring ourselves up. But yeah, absolutely. In order to get out of the trenches, you have to affirm, you have to incant, and you have to find the resources to make you the leader that you're meant to be.
Yeah, I think the a very key word that you used multiple times just now as you were explaining that was find. And I think so often we might sit there and expect, oh, they gave me the plan. They gave me the protocol. They gave me the blueprint. And now it's just going to follow suit. I remember when I first became a coach, I was so naive to think that I could just put an application link up on my Instagram and the leads were just going to come following through. I had no idea that 90% of my time was going to be spent in non-revenue generating activities, meaning generating conversation, putting content on social media, going to events. And a lot of that, a key word that I use in a lot of my coaching is inconvenience. We are not going to be naive to think that growth is going to be convenient by any means.
I have 100%, 100%. Anything worthwhile is going to take work. But guess what? It's you. The key word is growth, and you said it. Remember, if you don't water a plant, what happens?
It does.
Right. So how is it going to grow? You have to feed it, you have to nourish it, and it has to eventually grow limbs and leaves and build into a tree. Well, the same goes for us. If you don't do that, and again, a lot of people will blame their PTSDs. I mean, this all comes full circle. We call this a crazy eight because it has highs and lows. Emotions go here, emotions go there. And I'm just going back and forth into this figure eight. Well, the key thing is you have to stop the craziness, the insanity, and just think about what makes you happy. Well, I love video games. Okay, so if you're that person that loves video games, what is the attribute? What does it give you? Well, I had a young person the other day, his mother has had me work with, and she said, he never leaves the video games. And I want to pull out the plugs. I don't want him to play. And I said, if you take that away, you're taking away his identity. She goes, really? A video game? And I said, at home, he's attacked. I said, at school, who he's overweight and a nerd and everything else that comes with that title. But online, he's a superhero. They don't see his identity. He's Clark Kent at all these other, but he's Superman. There you go. You got to find the tools and the blueprint to make that person Superman. And if you could praise their attributes there, you can start building the character to get away from the video game and not seeing them that they believe they're a burden and slowly build their identity. Because right now, when you're not getting what you need, when you're feeling negative energy, you're not your identity. You're a behavior. And that's the truth. Because your identity, people know, like that person. I had another lady, she said, you know what? I seen this guy. I love him. And but I see someone else now. Why is that? And I said, because you're seeing, you fell in love with his identity, but his behavior is dictating who he is. And this goes for all of us. When it's easy to fall back into a routine when you're comfortable. The key thing is to get uncomfortable to get comfortable. I know that's going to sound weird to people, but you have
No,
to
it
get
makes sense.
uncomfortable to get comfortable. That's how leaders are born. So I could talk all day about this, and I wish we had 20 hours to help the community and help people, but I hope these tools that both of you and I have been giving people, you know, rewind this podcast 100 times, write these tools down because they're really twins. What you said and what I've said, again, you're a coach in fitness and life coach. And someone was telling me, they go, why do you say fitness people are life coaches? I said, imagine this. Imagine a robust or heavy set person coming in and they lose 40 pounds. Don't you think their identity has changed? Don't you think that now when they look in the mirror, they're inspired? People are saying, how did you do it? Wow, you're so confident. You're so beautiful. You're so handsome. You just changed that person's life. You gave them an outcome and a breakthrough. And I get that same high when I work with people online and they said, I never really realized that what I thought was a must was really a want. And I couldn't even answer, how do I know? When the real key thing is, how do you know about you? One of the last exercises I do with people, I say, go out and get like one of those timers that you do at Thanksgiving. Spend the $6, set it for 2 minutes, put it on your, you know, counter in your bathroom, and just stare, set it for 2 minutes, stare at the mirror, just stare. Don't say one word, because whenever we go into a bathroom, all we do is brush our teeth, make ourselves beautiful, wash our face, what have you, and leave. But when was the last time you really looked at yourself to really see, do I really know who that person is? I'll tell you the true story. So I had this gentleman, and I said, go do it. He goes, I think this is ridiculous. I said, when I brought you on, I said, will you do whatever it takes to find your identity? He said, okay, I get it. So at this point, he comes in. I'm waiting. I go, I'm going to wait right here. He goes, here's the timer. I go ahead. I go, leave the bathroom door open because I want to hear the timer. So I hear him click it. I hear tick, tick, tick. He doesn't make the 2 minutes. He comes out. He's red. He's got tears flowing. And I said, I'm going to give him for HIPAA violations. I'm going to call him Alan, not his real name. And I said, Alan, I go, what happened? He said, just like this, I'm going to be Alan. He goes, I looked at myself. My breath started to shift. And I turned red and I gave myself the finger. And I said, you gave yourself the finger. And I go, why is that? Because I don't like who I see. He said, looking at yourself brought his reality back, brought it about how he feels. And here was the funny thing is, he was seeing me because he goes, I think I'm ready for dating. He goes, it's been 6 months. I think I'm ready to get back into the game of dating. And I said, make sure first you like who you see before you get back out there. So he turns and I said, do you want the next person to meet that guy right there who doesn't even know how to deal with him? I said, you got to learn how to deal with that before you can invite anybody in your world. So I hope that, you know, again, these segments, but this has been to me a true match in heaven, you know, in reference to where we see each other, how we work with people every day. And I hope people get this perspective from both parts that You are the best. You just got to believe it.
Oh, Greg, I really appreciate, as you were sharing that story, by the way, I was thinking about my own personal FU moment. It was my first, very first ever appointment that I had with you, and you had me do the exact same exercise, except if I remember correctly, it was for the opposite. I think you were trying to get me to see light and to see intelligence and to see beauty and to ultimately
Yes.
love myself. And I remember how impactful that was, yet how I personally wanted to flick you off
You're right.
for having me do something as crazy as that. But man, it worked. But honestly, Greg, thank you so much for being on this
Absolutely.
podcast with me this evening. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your passion for all that you do with our audience. You're truly a godsend to me and the community that you serve.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. This has been wonderful.
You're great. Listeners, thank you again for tuning in. I'm so grateful for your continued support on the Psyche Behind the Physique. Be sure to leave us a review so we know how we're doing. Head over to my Instagram page at Mads Michi Fitness to tell me what topics you want to hear next. And check out the links in the description to work with myself at the Empowered Coaching Collective or Greg himself for one-on-one therapy. I will include his website below, but it is gregstewartcoaching.com. And his spelling of his name is a little interesting. It's Greggie Stewart, Stewart. Listeners, it's been real, and we'll see you in 2 Saturdays with an all-new episode that you don't want to miss. And always remember to be kind to one another and not to leave yourself out of the mix.